Welcome to the Above Politics Show.
Like it or not, we live in times of danger and uncertainty.
Dedicated to intelligent discussion and debate of serious political issues in the U.S. and around the globe.
Absolutely unrealistic.
Borrowing money from China to finance the war in Iraq.
President Bush continues to not let facts get in the way of his ideology.
From AbovePolitics.com, this is the Above Politics Show.
Hello and welcome to another fun-filled edition of the Above Politics Show. I am still the sexy and curvaceous Justin Case.
That paints a really interesting picture there. And I am Martin Bain. And let's just say I probably have a face made for radio.
So, Martin, how are you today?
I'm very well. You?
I'm doing pretty good. So, what's with the Robbie Williams t-shirt?
Oh, you know, we seem to have scored big at ATS. We have some exclusive material with Robbie Williams. And before people go, is that the Robbie Williams? He of Take That Fame and he of a very successful solo recording career. Yes, one and the same, dear listener, who has been to the Gilliland Ranch to continue the investigation. So, you know, we have some exclusive material from Mr. Williams on the website, which I think is very exciting. And then also, if you want to go to the 11th Bay Area UFO Convention, you can get to see, among other stars of ATS, Dave Rabbit, Johnny Anonymous, and no doubt a whole host of other celebrities from AboveTopSecret.com.
I know what everybody is thinking. Where are these things? How do I sign up for them? So, without any further ado, here is Dave Rabbit himself to tell you all about the Robbie Williams thing and the Bay Area UFO Convention.
Are you ready for a close encounter of the third kind? Well, so are we. Hi, everyone. Dave Rabbit here with the ATS Mix Show from AboveTopSecret.com. My partner, Johnny Anonymous, is waist-deep in reviewing over 120 hours of videotape that the ATS investigation team took over a period of 10 days while they were all at James Gilliland Sanctuary at Trout Lake, Washington, overlooking the beautiful Mount Adams. In addition to Mark Allen, also known as Springer, Stephen Melzer, also known as Cracker, Johnny Anonymous, also known as Johnny Anonymous, we had a very special VIP AboveTopSecret.com member that accompanied the team by the name of Robbie Williams. And in case you're one of the few people who live your life underneath a huge rock, Robbie Williams is the English singer-songwriter who has sold well over 100 million records and is in the United Kingdom Music Hall of Fame. Robbie and his crew join Mark, Stephen, and Johnny for a casual conversation about what each of them saw over a few days at the sanctuary. So if you want to hear the Robbie Williams UFO interview at Gilliland Ranch and see some of the amazing footage that was captured there by my partner, Johnny Anonymous, you can find this incredible conversation and video on the homepage of AboveTopSecret.com, the number one alternative to mainstream media for alternative topics.
Hello, everyone. I'm Spencer Tracy. Along with Doc Hancock, I host the new BTS Mix Show. We have a lot of fun, and when we're done with our shows, we like to head over and listen to our sister shows, the ATS Mix with Dave Rabbit and Johnny Anonymous, and the Above Politics Show with Martin Bain and Justin Case on the Above Network LLC. The ATS Mix Show with Dave Rabbit and Johnny Anonymous is the source for the latest information on breaking stories, conspiracy theories, and some stuff that's just plain weird. Johnny and Dave have insightful discussions about member posts, member interviews, and exclusive interviews with experts in their field. When I need the latest news and insight from the political arena, I log on to the Above Politics Show with Martin Bain and Justin Case. Martin and Justin really break it down for me. They discuss member posts, interview members about their stance on the issues, and they have access to today's noted political figures and authors. So come on over and deny boredom with me, Spencer Tracy, and my co-host, the marvelous Doc Hancock, on the BTS Mix Show. Deny ignorance with the ATS Mix Show with Dave Rabbit and Johnny Anonymous. And deny apathy with the Above Politics Show with Martin Bain and Justin Case. Be part of the revolution. The Above Network LLC.
Hi, everybody. Dave Rabbit here from the ATS Mix Show. And I want to tell you, I've got something that's really fabulous coming your way, and we want each of you to be a part of this experience. Last year, my partner, Johnny Anonymous, and I attended the Bay Area UFO Expo in San Jose, California. This year, the founder of the event, Victoria Jack, invited Johnny and I back again. I can't believe it, neither could Johnny, but it's fact. We are going to be attending the 10th Annual Bay Area UFO Expo, this year located in the beautiful Marriott Hotel in Santa Clara, California. Now, it's going to be held this year on September 27th and 28th of 2008. There's going to be all kinds of vendors there. There's going to be all kinds of speakers there. There's going to be all kinds of special featured guests, which I cannot mention because it's top secret. But there's going to be all kinds of things about UFOs, alien encounters, earth mysteries, government cover-ups, and so much more that I just don't have the time to mention. But you can find out more information by going to abovetopsecret.com/forum. Go to the ATS Mix information area, and you'll find a thread that says Meet Dave and Johnny at the Bay Area UFO Expo. Now, for those of you that are members of the AboveTopSecret.com family, you have some really special opportunities. Number one, you can ask questions for the guests that are listed there on this particular thread. And number two, and probably more important, is that you will get a chance to win 10,000 ATS points for bringing us a can of Bush beans and being one of the first 10 that do it. So there's a couple of incentives right there. And actually, we're going to actually probably eat the Bush beans, or either that, or we'll autograph the Bush beans and give them back to you. And you can sell them on eBay. Now, won't that be fun for everybody? Okay, and then now, I tell you something else that's really going to be amazing. Johnny and I are probably going to do all kinds of crazy stuff like we did last year. And it's kind of like we were Pac-Man Jones with the Dallas Cowboys. Last year, I thought Johnny and I were going to get absolutely banned for all the shenanigans that we did. I mean, we were going through the expo area with all the exhibitors, and we were singing Edelweiss, and we were getting a group together, and we were doing this and doing that, and we were singing songs, and I don't know how many renditions of Do You Know the Way to San Jose that Johnny and I sang last year, but it was absolutely chaotic fun to the 10th degree. And this year is going to be even better. And I can't wait to meet a lot of you guys and gals out there that are fans of the ATS Mix Show. And as we're approaching our 100th show, I mean, we want to thank each and every one of the 23 million subscribers and fans that we have accumulated in the last year. And if you like more information, as I say, you can go to abovetopsecret.com/forum. Go to the ATS Mix information and find the thread that says Meet Dave and Johnny. You can also go directly to the Bay Area UFO Expo site, which is located at www.thebayareaufoexpo.com. And this is also located on all the different pages. It shows the artwork with all the guests and whatever. So please, come join Johnny Anonymous and yours truly, Dave Rabbit, for a weekend of fun on September the 27th and 28th of 2008 at the Marriott Hotel, Santa Clara, California, at the 10th Annual Bay Area UFO Expo. And for those of you that fly in, you fly in through the San Jose International Airport, and the hotel is about 5 minutes away from that location. So, hope to see all of you there. Peace and love, everybody.
Well, I just wonder, I haven't seen any of my tickets to the Bay Area UFO convention. I suspect that may well be just in the office inbox, or there's a clerical oversight by ATS management.
Remember, we still have serious budget issues around here, so they may be keeping that in mind. And just so that our listeners know, we actually have a brand new snack machine here in the studio. I don't know why it's actually in the studio, but it's here, and I don't know who's responsible for it, but you know they took that one out of our budget.
And there's no fruit or, you know, healthy vitamin drinks in the machine either. But hey, never mind.
Is that actually necessary?
What, fruit? I think it is occasionally. It is occasionally.
Oh, well, speaking of things that are necessary, ouch, man, I've got some seriously bad economic news to report from here in the United States. In recent days, the United States federal government has taken over federal conservatorship of Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. But in the last 24 hours, as we go to record this show, ouch, the Lehman Brothers Bank on Wall Street is failing, and Uncle Sam says no bailouts for you.
Yeah, and I've got to say, it must be nice waking up to realize your government has saddled you with $6 trillion worth of additional debt.
Oh, tell you what, that's pretty scary. It's going to make me pay much more close attention the next time I balance my checkbook.
Yeah, but you know, and you have to sort of turn around and think, you know, did the U.S. government actually need to save these institutions? I think there are some people saying, well, okay, they're commercial enterprises. I know their history,
but I suppose I have a question, Justin. Why save these businesses? They're, you know, in the public domain. They're owned by shareholders. They're, to my mind, the same as any other business. You know, would you wade in and save a local business in Alaska because it was failing? I don't think you would. So why did the U.S. government decide to saddle the American people to save these businesses?
Well, now, to be perfectly fair, the federal government started Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac and then transitioned them into private ownership. But more importantly, these two companies together hold about 55% of all of the home mortgages here in the United States. If these companies fell apart, then you'd see half of the you'd see half of those people right off the bat go into foreclosure, and that would be such a catastrophic hit to the American economy. It would make the stock market crash of 1929 look like a Sunday picnic. So they had what you might think of as the national interest in mind there, and that contrasts very sharply to Lehman Brothers Bank. That is a private investment bank. It's been around since the early 1900s. It's all private money, and every time somebody signs on the dotted line, they know the risks. And To be quite honest about it, the amount of home mortgage paper that they hold is probably 1% or less of what Fannie Mae or Freddie Mac might hold individually. So they were within their rights to say yes to one and no to the other. But you know that Wall Street is going to be really cranky about this, because several months ago, if you'll recall, you and I talked about the Bear Stearns bailout and the fact that they very sneakily and quietly did it on a Sunday night when nobody was looking.
Absolutely. And you know, even as we go to air, there's now talk about AIG, which is a huge insurance company which insures billions of pounds worth of loans that banks across the world have, are also in financial trouble. And I sort of heard something about the governor of New York saying that they had to find vast sums of money potentially in the next 24 to 48 hours, or potentially that might go under. And it'll be interesting to see whether the US government bails this one out, or whether, I understand, some of the global banks have now put together a fund to try and help some of these other businesses. You know, you have to think it's a extremely interesting times. But I suppose the other thing I see is, you know, how many of these, you know, senior directors and CEOs of these businesses are going to turn around and say, guess what, guys, we made some horrendous decisions. I'm not going to take my severance package. I'm not going to take my, you know, there's, I've heard talk that the senior management of, you know, Freddie and Fannie are potentially going to be, you know, if they are let go as part of this, are going to receive some significant sums of money in to compensate them for potentially running a business in an appalling fashion, and causing the U.S. government to bail it out. It seems like it doesn't matter whether they fail. They still get their money.
That's true. Now, for those of our listeners who aren't clear on what we're talking about, the concept is called a golden parachute. And a great many CEOs of corporations have it built into their contracts so that if they are let go for any reason other than their own voluntary separation, then they get a severance package, which is typically based on 2 to 4 years of their annual salary. And no matter what you think about that, whether you think that it's good or bad, on paper, it looks like absolutely huge money. For example, the big cheese for Lehman Brothers, when he punches out, his severance package is going to be worth a grand total of something on the order of $100 million.
And that, I'm sure the thousands of people across the world, and you know, potentially Lehman's had their European headquarters in the city of London, and talk of 3,000-4,000 people being let go. I'm sure that's, you know, they're going to be really proud and really pleased about that one. But it seems that these people take no responsibility for failure. Sorry, if you fail to run a business properly, someone ought to just turn and say, sorry, I'm not going to give you a severance package. You failed. You know, now there are going to be opportunities in businesses where things go wrong through, no, you can say there is no fault of those, but you know, the fact that mortgages were allowed to be potentially missold, yeah. This isn't something that happened last week in the financial markets. You know, you and I have been talking about, you know, the subprime market, the issues there for months. You'd be thinking that, you know, these people, managers and senior directors, would have woken up to this one and said, actually, hang on a minute, we need to try and do some things here, rather than sort of say, I'll carry on, I'll wait for the US government to bail me out. I'll wait, you know, for, you know, some of these other banks. You know, Merrill Lynch was taken over by Bank of America, and there's talk in Europe that Barclays Bank may be taking over some of the non-toxic elements of Lehman Brothers' portfolio. It seems that, you know, other businesses have been incredibly entrepreneurial and thinking, hang on a minute, we can make a fast buck here. We can go and maybe take something that actually has some value, not saddle ourselves with the toxic stuff, take all the good stuff, make a huge profit for their shareholders. So you have to wonder why Bank of America aren't experiencing some of these issues, why Barclays aren't experiencing some of these issues. Does that say that there's a lack of quality senior executives in the world?
Well, the short answer is yes, because Bank of America and Barclays are actually built on similar business models. They're actually fairly, I think the word would be conservative when it comes to their diversification. And both of these banks are so incredibly liquid in terms of the cash they have on at least on paper anyway, that they are financial powers unto themselves. And so part of what they're doing right now is they're brand hunting. Bank of America isn't so much buying Merrill Lynch as buying the Merrill Lynch brand. And you know, Barclays is doing the same thing when it's purchasing the spinoff elements of Lehman Brothers. You know darn well that Lehman Brothers will disappear off the letterhead, and it's only those brand names which are still effective. Those are the only ones that are going to remain in Europe when the dust settles on this.
Absolutely, but you know, I still think it's incredible that, you know, these people can fail these businesses so appallingly badly. You know, thousands of people across the world are basically been told, guess what, you haven't got a job. And then they'll hear that, you know, the guy, the head man at Lehman's, is going to take home, you know, maybe up to $100 million for, you know, running a business into the ground. You know, running a business in such a way that it eventually said, hey, guess what, we're bankrupt.
That's true. Yeah. And the thing to watch out for here now is how this is going to affect the American presidential elections, because there are at least 8 more banks on the chopping block right now. And the company that's been most talked about in the American news media right now is the Washington National chain of banks. And the scary thing is there, those guys have connections to credit card companies. And as more and more banks fail, which have credit card subsidiaries, the situation for the average voter is going to get so much more worse that not only are we going to vote with our wallets in November, but we're probably going to be vindictive about it because, okay, yeah, sure, the price of oil has come down to less than $100. That's per barrel, and the price per gallon of gasoline is slowly, very slowly coming down. But holy cow, you're looking at an unemployment rate that in the next 30 days is going to go up so much that right now there is no federal online calculator that can give you an accurate estimate. So we could be looking at as much as an 8% national unemployment rate by the time we go to the polls and vote.
And you have to think where are the majority of these jobs going to come from? And, you know, I have seen in media and some press that, you know, potentially if some of these people come from some of the fat cats in the city, I suspect there'll be many of the, you know, normal average workers, you know, who sort of bust a gut for 40, 45 hours and potentially don't earn huge sums of money, aren't actually going to be losing any sleep over the fact that some fat cat who's, you know, earns bonuses of several millions of pounds or millions of dollars a year is being laid off. So, you know, it depends where these things come from. And the other, I think the other big issue here is are they going to say, well, this is the fault of the Republicans? Because to me, that would seem slightly unfair, because I think events have happened that no government, no president could actually have foreseen in the way they happened. You know, I don't think the U.S., you know, I don't think you can necessarily blame the fact that mortgages were missold exclusively on George Bush. People will, but to me that does seem slightly unfair.
It can't be, and the proof is in the current evidence. If this were specifically an American problem, then this would be just the one thing that sinks the American economy, and everybody else would be doing whatever it is they're doing. But because this poison has spread worldwide, there are literally thousands of financial institutions and financial advisors who are complicit in this worldwide.
And how many of those are going to, you know, be subject to some kind of judicial process? You know, how many people who have missold mortgages in the States, how many of those people are going to see themselves in prison and have, say, sorry, we paid you $650,000 in commissions on those mortgages, guess what, we want it back? I suspect very few of them will actually be made to pay the price here, and unfortunately it's going to be the rest of us that has to foot the bill with potentially, you know, mortgage rates going up, credit becoming harder, which then has a knock-on effect, not only us because we don't spend as much, so therefore business doesn't get as much. And then when businesses say, I want to expand the cart because they haven't got the sales, and anyway, getting the business finance is difficult because now there's more conditions put on it. You know, and you sort of think it's probably a fairly small number of people that have actually caused this problem. I suspect the number of people that caused this problem probably run to less than 10,000 people.
In the United States, yes, I'd say less than 10,000. I couldn't begin to speculate what the worldwide numbers are.
All I
can tell you is that from now on, even though John McCain's got Sarah Palin in his back pocket, I just don't see him winning this election.
Even though, as we go to air, some of the polls, there are some polls now saying that Senator McCain actually has a lead, and if there was an election, if the election was tomorrow, he could well become the president, the next president of the United States.
And I think that's for the moment. That's here in the moment. You know, you and I right now we're talking about financial events, which while they're being talked about on the financial news channels, the full impact of these things still has not arrived in suburbia, but it will as we begin the next month, because people are going to the people who are currently out of work now, the folks who are packing up their desks at Lehman Brothers right now, they don't become full-on unemployment statistics until October 1st. There's a lot of things that don't hit our economy until the top of the month changeover, but when that happens, I think that McCain's lead in the polls will it won't entirely evaporate, but it'll be so substantially eroded that a lot of people are going to be on. They're going to have to be brutally honest with themselves when they consider why that's happening.
But if you think typically, it's probably seen that the Republicans are typically, you know, probably just I think the best word to describe, but are probably seen more as being, you know, fiscally tighter than the Democrats. The Democrats typically would turn around and say, okay, we want to have more services, you know, spend more taxpayers' money, whereas typically the Republicans have always had this that, you know, they typically don't want to do that. And if you think if people are going to vote with their wallets, are they going to then turn around and say, okay, but do I want to vote for, you know, typically the Democratic Party, who typically may want to spend more of my taxes on things that I don't think are important? Or do I want to say, okay, fine, the Republicans, yeah, maybe they haven't done some things, and, you know, you still have, you know, the war on terror issue, Iraq, Afghanistan, but, you know, you quite rightly say people vote with their wallet. Are they going to turn around and say, well, hang on a minute, yeah, okay, but maybe the Republican Party aren't going to fritter my money away on, you know, social programs that really don't benefit me?
Traditionally speaking, the Republicans have been financially frugal, but in the last 8 years, the Bush administration has spent as if it were a Democratic administration. And that really has put a lot of people off the Republican brand. Although, I gotta tell you, here in Alaska, that's not altogether true. The gentleman who's currently serving as our representative in the House of Representatives is a longtime incumbent by the name of Don Young, and he's being challenged by a guy who's known to us here in state-level politics, Sean Parnell, and they've actually gone into recount mode because Parnell is so close to winning that even Don Young is losing sleep over this. So it is possible, what you say, it is possible for some Republicans to thrive and succeed in this environment. And to prove that, I'd actually like to play for our listeners now a recent interview that I had a chance to do with Sean Parnell.
Hi, everybody. This is Dave Rabbit.
And I'm his co-host, Johnny Anonymous. And we do a show called The ATS Mix on AboveTopSecret.com. You know, after Dave and I get through doing one of our shows, we like going and listening to one of our sister shows on the Above Network LLC.
And you know, Johnny, one of my favorites is over on BelowTopSecret.com. It's the new and hilarious BTS Mix Show with Spencer Tracy and Doc Hancock, his partner. When you're looking for lighter entertainment, these guys will rock your world with the best of sports, news, television, radio, and general discussion.
Oh, good.
They feature member posts, member on-air conversations, and celebrity interviews. This is a show that everyone is really going to enjoy.
And if by chance politics might be more your cup of tea, then AbovePolitics.com is going to be right up your alley. You know, the Above Politics show features Martin Bain and Justin Case, and they give you insightful and informative information that you're just not going to find anywhere else. They feature intelligent conversation on posts from our members, member interviews about their stance and platforms, as well as interviews with noted political figures and authors. You know, Dave, this really is your one-stop political shop.
And you're right about that, Johninator. So come join us all. Deny ignorance with Johnny and I on the ATS Mix Show.
Deny boredom with the BTS Mix Show with Spencer Tracy and Doc Hancock.
And deny apathy with the Above Politics Show with our friends Martin Bain and Justin Case.
And then you, too, can be a part of the revolution. Above Network LLC.
Hello, Sean Parnell. This is Justin Case from the Above Politics show. How are you today?
I'm well. Thanks so much for calling in.
Well, so I understand that you're running for Congress there in the state of Alaska.
That's correct.
Okay. And can you tell us a little bit about yourself before you got into politics?
I was raised in Alaska. My father actually was here during statehood at Fort Richardson as a soldier. And I came to Alaska in fifth grade, graduated from East Anchorage High School, went to college and law school, and met my wife, who I've been married to now for 21 years this week, and we've got two daughters. I am a lawyer by trade and served a couple terms in the Alaska State House of Representatives and one term in the Alaska State Senate. Was elected lieutenant governor in 2006. I've owned my own small business for about 9 years, and frankly came from a family of entrepreneurs. My father and mother owned their own small business in Anchorage for about 25 years. And so that's a little bit about my background.
So you really have started from the ground up to where you are today.
Well, that's the beauty of Alaska. I think Alaska offers opportunity that other states don't. We're such a young state that the social structures are not fixed. You don't have to have, you know, a big name or a lot of money to make your way. You just have to have really a vision for who you can be, put a lot of hard work into it, and opportunity here, I think, is definitely why I've stayed and decided to raise our family here.
What is your political vision for the future?
I see this campaign and my role as being about restoring trust and honesty to the process. I see it being about promoting economic growth and opportunity for others through policies implemented by the government. So, for example, Alaska is rich with resources. I want to make sure that we can bring our natural gas to market so that the rest of America can lower their energy prices and so that Alaskans can have lower heating costs and lower energy prices. When it comes to fiscal policy, I want people to keep more of their hard-earned tax dollars and spend it themselves instead of the federal government spending it. Those are just some of the ways I see being able to serve.
Now, if people want to know more about this, where do they find your website?
It is at parnellforcongress.com. That's P-A-R-N-E-L-L for congress.com.
So what got you your start in business? What did you get bit by the bug, or did you just follow in your family's footsteps?
In business, yeah, it was definitely the view of my father. My real early story is that I was about a fifth grader or sixth grader, and my father lost his job, and he took me to the unemployment line with him. He explained to me what unemployment insurance was, that he was collecting for something he had paid for, and that he was going to be off of it and start his own business within about 4 to 6 weeks. He actually walked me through the process as a sixth grader or so of starting his own business, which he then had for 25 years and fed our family with, and just gave me that same entrepreneurial spirit, that same opportunity, and Alaska, you know, provided that foundation as well.
So now the reason that I wanted to ask that question is because a lot of our listeners are jaded when it comes to politics, and a lot of what comes into our mailbag is, I don't see the point. So with that in mind, I in particular am interested in having our listeners hear from people like you, because you know, I mean, you and I have never met before. This is your own story. And I'm hoping that people will draw some inspiration from that.
One of our teenage daughters works in a store. This is her first paying summer job. And she came home early this summer with her paycheck. And it was the first time, you know, she'd seen a paycheck. And she said, "Dad, what's all this money coming out of my paycheck?" And it was her taxes and the insurance. And right then I was able to say, you know, there's one direct connection between you and your government. You can elect a representative who will work to lower your taxes and let you keep more of that money, or you can elect somebody who will take more and want to spend more for the federal government. I mean, it really comes down to just what kind of opportunities we can create for individuals, what kind of freedoms individuals have, and whether we're willing to, you know, look beyond ourselves as leaders and say, "Hey, I'm here to establish trust between the people and their representatives. And everything we do must be about that."
Now, I'm sure you must have your own political horror stories. I've told more than a few of mine on this show. So just to pique my own curiosity here, can you tell me what was the first time in your life that government seriously rubbed you the wrong way?
I think it was the first time that I actually saw the Alaska legislature in action in the 70s, and I was, I saw a few people, not everybody, but I saw a few people who just did not treat their office and the institution as a kind of a sacred trust. They took it more as a public entitlement, you know, that they were so important that they got to serve in this office. And I was just repulsed by that arrogance. And that really was one of the motivating factors for me to run when I was 29 years of age for the State House. And that's stayed with me ever since.
I certainly can appreciate that, because as I and my co-host interview more and more people, we're finding that your story isn't that unique. There's some transformative event that happens fairly early in life, and it makes the people who run for office say, darn it, doggone it, that's not right. I'm going to fix that.
Yeah, yep, exactly.
So what's it like to run for Congress? I mean, what's it like? What's your day-to-day experience?
You know, it is different every day, and it requires a lot of flexibility in scheduling. I'm also Alaska's lieutenant governor, and so I have duties that really must come first in my service there. And that's pretty much like every incumbent. You know, the incumbent congressman, for instance, has to make sure that his congressional duties are taken care of. And I need to do that before campaigning. But in terms of a typical day of campaigning, yesterday I was in Fairbanks, Alaska, participated in a debate, ended up giving several interviews, participated in a community event where a cultural and visitor center was opened. I had campaign meetings with staff, still dealt with, I'm guessing, 60 or so emails related to my lieutenant governor's work, made phone calls related to my lieutenant governor's work. I mean, it's really a mixture of activity, but each day is a little different than the last.
Now, you mentioned that you're the current lieutenant governor for your state, and as I understand it, the duties of lieutenant governor vary from state to state. So, in a nutshell, what are your responsibilities?
In a nutshell, our Constitution provides that, and our law provides that the lieutenant governor here oversees elections, regulations, and initiatives in terms of seeing those through the processes, and any duties delegated by the governor. And in my case, that's Governor Palin, Governor Sarah Palin of Alaska, and I have a great and good working relationship. She's given me our responsibility. She's given me budget responsibility early in our administration because of my experience with the state budget in the legislature. She's given me leadership roles with the Criminal Justice Working Group to try to reduce recidivism in our state, you know, the number of reoffenses committed. And so it really, the lieutenant governor's role in Alaska can be just a few functions related to elections, initiatives, regulations, or it can be much larger when the relationship is good between the governor and lieutenant governor.
I don't even want to ask you about what things would be like if relations weren't so good.
We actually have a unique circumstance here, and I think that's better for the people of Alaska. When I was on the campaign trail for lieutenant governor in 2006, I asked a former lieutenant governor whether he knew of any governor or lieutenant governor that had maintained a good working relationship throughout their term, and the answer was never. And I said, I'm out to change that, because I don't think there's any reason why a governor and lieutenant governor should not be working together on Alaskans' behalf.
That's a very enlightened attitude. I'm impressed. Can you tell me what your top three goals would be if you did get elected to Congress?
You bet. One, I want to restore trust and honesty to that seat, so I'm going to bring that about and just clean up Washington from that standpoint. Two, I want to make sure that we're not leaving our generation or the next, our kids' generation, with a national deficit that they're going to have to pay. I want to make sure that we have economic growth and resource development in our state, and that's going to take a tax policy where the federal government does not continue reaching into the pockets of American taxpayers to spend more, but actually lives within its means and puts its own house in order first. So those are my priorities: restoring trust, eliminating wasteful government spending, lowering taxes, and getting our economy moving again.
Now, speaking of economic issues, I understand that your legislature is currently trying to hash out a bill that will move your gas line forward. Can you give me the current sit rep on that?
Yeah, you bet. In fact, the legislature passed the governor's bill called the Alaska Gas Line Inducement Act, which means that a license has been given to a company named TransCanada, that if they fulfill Alaska condition, that they will get an incentive from the state, a cash incentive for moving a pipeline forward. What that means is that the private sector companies now need to come together and negotiate a project among themselves. So it's what's happened is the federal government has stepped forward with incentives for a gas pipeline. The state government has stepped forward with incentives for a gas pipeline, and now it's time for the companies to negotiate a project and make that happen. And hopefully that'll mean a project occurs and the other states will enjoy cheaper natural gas, cheaper energy in their own homes and businesses.
That is pretty impressive, and it sounds like your congressional goals are also pretty impressive, so I wish you well.
Well, thank you. I appreciate the opportunity to speak with you and your audience. Thanks so much for taking us above politics.
Being part of the revolution is easy. Star, flag, and dig the mother. Whether you find a great topic or really enjoy one of our podcasts, you can make it even better by taking the time to show your appreciation and applause by giving the material a star, then flag, and finally a dig. This will draw attention to the thread or podcast, and by doing so, you're making a difference and improving the ATS, BTS, and Above Politics experience. So remember, when you find a great thread or podcast, star, flag, and dig the mother. Thanks for being part of the revolution from your friends at the Above Networks, LLC.
And hey, Justin, this could be a little bit of history, that little recording, because, you know, maybe in the next couple of weeks we might find out that we actually spoke to a bona fide member of your legislature, you know, a Senate, a representative. Now, just how cool is that going to be?
Hey, I'm all for making history. And I would like to point out to our listeners that this is a guy who's, you know, you've never heard his name before outside of Alaska, and yet he's challenging the establishment. And even if he doesn't win, he's going to get so close to winning that the state party officials are going to have to take him more seriously in the future. So if you needed a reason, if you needed somebody to inspire you to get into politics in your own state, in your own country, then think about this guy and what he's so close to doing.
Absolutely. And I know we also had, as part of Justin's magic of getting some press accreditation with the Republican nominating convention, we also had the opportunity to speak to another Alaskan who was a delegate at the Republican nominating convention. So we have I believe he's a retired colonel in the Air Force.
Retired major. I'm sure he'd like the improved rank and the increased retirement pay that goes along with it. But Mr. David Boyle did in fact go to the Republicans nominating convention, and he did in fact serve on one of the party platform committees. And in the following interview, he's going to tell us all about that.
Well, this is David Boyle. I've been a resident of Alaska for 12 years now. I came in the Air Force in 1968, and I retired in 1988. And at that time, I became your proverbial Mr. Mom before it was popular. We have three adopted children who are 24, 23, and 21 right now. So the year I retired, my children were the ages 1, 2, and 3. Lots of diapers. Stayed home with them because I thought it was very important, particularly I think any time is if you can afford to, stay home, raise your children. And we were fortunate enough to be able to do that. And I thought, particularly because they didn't have a father figure and may never have a father figure in their lives. My wife is also retired from the Air Force in 2001, and the Air Force brought us up here in 96 to Elmendorf Air Force Base. We were stationed there 3 years, and then we got transferred to Florida and stayed there 2 years, and, of course, always intended to come back. She retired, and we came back in 2001, and been here ever since, and just love this wonderful state.
You know, I hear that story quite a bit. My own father retired here in Alaska in January 1st of 1980, and he had come up here for a tour 73 to 75 and decided he liked it so much that he just had to come back, and so we've been here ever since.
Well, you know, you're right. You hear that story a lot. As a matter of fact, I don't know if you know, but the state of Alaska has the highest percentage per capita of veterans. Alaska probably has 20% of its population is veterans. I think that's because they come up here and they find out that, wow, they love the lifestyle. It's different than a lot of the, you know, outside states. Plus, a lot of the folks in the military kind of are outdoors.
That's true. Now, did your military experience play any role in eventually forging you into a GOP delegate for 2008?
I'm probably a moderate to conservative thinking person on all the issues, particularly on national defense. And I think, in general terms, you know, I think that the military, at least in the past when I was in, has been pretty much moderate to conservative in their, on their stances on issues. It did, the military did, of course, form a large basis for my stance on national security.
So how did you get to be a GOP delegate for 2008?
Well, that's an interesting story. I just joined the Republican Party here in Alaska in last fall, 2007, and because I thought I wasn't happy with the direction the Republican Party was taking, and that's my own personal thought. So I decided I needed to step in and help solve the problems we were having up here. And, you know, I think a lot of Sarah Palin and some of the other folks up here. And so I decided, well, I supported John McCain, by the way, back in 2000 and when we were in Florida, and minimally, but I did support him. And so I came up here and I thought, well, I'm going to support McCain this year. He's running, and maybe I can help his efforts to get the nomination. I was part of the charge, that, which is very small up here, by the way, to help get Senator McCain on the ballot for the Republican primary in February of this year. And we needed 50 signatures, and we were lucky to get those. And fortunately, he was on our straw ballot in at the convention here in February. This is the first time I've ever been involved in politics. The Republican convention here was eye-opening. It was really exciting, very exciting. A lot. It wasn't boring and just a lot of paperwork and words. Some tremendous speakers. We had ex-Lieutenant Governor Mike Steele from Maryland, fantastic individual, wonderful speaker, very intelligent. So I got involved, and I decided to go to the convention, pay my little fee, and go to the convention and vote for Senator McCain in the straw poll and voice my opinion on some of the platform planks in the Alaska platform, which I did. Fortunately enough, the nominating committee, which is a small committee of Republican members here in Alaska, picked me.
What are the duties of a delegate?
Well, that's a very good question, because I'm not so sure I'm aware of all the duties of a delegate as well. But one of the duties, of course, is to participate in the nominating process from the floor and to vote for a particular candidate. And, of course, the presumptive candidate this year is Senator McCain. So we have delegates. We have 29 delegates from Alaska, which is, by the way, very interesting, because we have more delegates to the Republican convention than 16 other states, because they base the number of delegates on how strong of a state you are in accordance with the Republican Party. In other words, how long have you had a Republican governor, congressional delegation, et cetera. So with those other, all those other delegates are pledged to the other candidates, maybe like Romney, Huckabee, Ron Paul, and Senator McCain. Senator McCain has three delegates that are pledged to him from Alaska, but I believe most of the other delegates, if not all, will also vote for Senator McCain on the first ballot, you know, on the roll call ballot. And once he gets enough votes, then it'll be by unanimity. So that's one of the things we do at the convention. And then we also vote on the nominations for vice presidential candidate. And we listen to, of course, all the briefings, all the presentations from all the different speakers. And we rub elbows with the other delegations. The particular delegation we'll be living with in the hotel accommodations will be the delegation from Tennessee. So it ought to be interesting to talk to some of the folks from the volunteer state. And one of the other things we're going to be doing is that some of the delegates, two of us from Alaska, are going to be on the platform committee. Myself and Kim Skipper from Eagle River will be on the platform committee.
What exactly does that entail?
Well, the platform committee sets out basically the vision of the Republican Party for the next 4 years. And they have it broken down into several different categories. For example, business and economy, and what does the party stand for? What do they want to see? How are they going to solve the problems? And what's their vision for the future? They've broken it down also into issues like education committee, the social issues, the usual issues like on the right to life, et cetera, in the social area. And the other issue, one that we're very interested in, Kim Skipper and myself, is the Energy and Resources Committee. And all the different delegations from across the country, the different states, will be having submitting maybe resolutions to each one of these different subcommittees for their approval and review. And, of course, Ms. Skipper and myself, we're going to be pushing for, hopefully one of us will get on the Energy Committee. We're going to be pushing very hard for drilling in the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge and hopefully get that into the platform. And maybe we can also help bring around some of the leadership in the Republican Party.
So for those of our listeners who are still on the fence, if any of them were by chance thinking about getting involved in politics, whether it was to actually run for office or be a delegate like yourself, what would you say to them to help make up their minds?
Well, I would say to them, I think you probably owe it to yourself, but as Senator McCain says, it's service before self. Country before self. I think you owe it to your country to get involved. And if you think it needs changing, jump in with both feet and start changing it. Otherwise, you'll be complaining tomorrow, and 10 years from tomorrow, you'll still be complaining about it. And that's why I put myself into this position, so that I can be on the forefront of changing some of the system that we have today and making it more responsive to the average person in this country, which I think is the great middle part of the country. In other words, 70% of the population, I think, actually believes like I do, that we need to make politics more responsive to the average person on the street and make this, let's say, more of a republic democracy than it is today, more responsive to the citizen. And that's why I've gotten involved. And I challenge every other person that's listening to get involved as well. And, you know, through the party, be it one of the two major parties or a third party, just get involved. And to take a stance on issues and support those issues and defend those issues from your position. And so that's what I would say. I challenge them to do it, as John Kennedy says, you know, do it for your country, not for yourself.
Now, I have to say that's a great interview because, you know, I think a lot of people outside North America probably don't understand. You know, they see all the razzmatazz of, you know, the nominating convention. So it's great to actually have someone who is there involved in it. You know, and it just changes the view of it a little bit because instead of it becoming something you see on the TV or see pictures in the radio, there's a clever one. See pictures in the newspapers. And this is someone who is there, who has experienced it. And, you know, to my mind, there can be nothing better than having someone who is there, who has experienced it. So, hey, I think that's, you know, more of the education of the Above Politics show of our members. And I suppose the interesting thing that we have in the UK that you don't have in the US is that, you know, we have a fairly strong third party in the country, and it will be interesting to see whether people will just flip-flop between, well, I'm not going to vote Labour, I'm going to vote Conservative, or whether some of the people who say, hang on a minute, I voted Labour last time, but can I vote Conservative? Can I make that almost ideological jump from, you know, left, you know, social, you know, being either a socialist or a social democrat? Can I make that leap to move to being a Conservative? Or whether the Liberal Democrats in the UK will benefit from the people thinking, well, I'm not sure I can go the full hog. Because typically in the States, you know, yes, whilst we've spoken to Wayne Root, who was the VP candidate for the Libertarian Party, you know, I don't think anyone realistically expects the Libertarian Party to have any chance of having, you know, getting anywhere in the presidential elections. It seems in the US, you know, you have three choices. You either vote Democrat, Republican, or you don't. There's nothing in the middle that actually has any meaning or purpose that anyone can say, I can't jump from being a Republican to being a Democrat and vice versa. There's no middle ground that these people can sort of coalesce in and say, actually, I'm happy to send a message to the two big parties. Guess what, people? I don't think either of you are that good. You need to sharpen your act. And that's I'm not sure whether that's perceived as being a bad thing in U.S. politics.
You know, actually, I think that we are starting to see a middle ground. And I would be willing to bet you at least a cup of coffee that in the aftermath of these elections, they'll probably have the numbers by the end of November. I'd be willing to bet you that the independents out there, meaning the Constitution Party, Liberty Party, Green Party, even the Libertarian Party, they're going to be making such significant gains that individually they're not going to seem impressive. But if you total all of their numbers together, in total, the aggregate is going to send a serious message to the Republicans and Democrats, because what you're going to see is guys like Wayne Root are going to tour the country and they're going to start stumping and they're going to say, hey, look, we made enough of a showing that now it's time to start running candidates at the local level. We start building up from the grassroots, and maybe not in 2012, but eventually at some later point in this century, we are going to be such serious contenders that, well, we may not put somebody in the White House, we may actually have enough of a loyal following to influence who goes into the White House. And for those of our listeners who are thinking European stuff right now, if that sounds like coalition building, then that's exactly what I mean.
Yeah, and you could take that to a logical extension, is that, yeah, whilst they may not be able to get a candidate to be president, I suspect, you know, if you say that this third way in American politics would grow as you describe, Justin, you could see them potentially having a big influence on who maybe the VP candidate is, or, you know, you could even, if you take it to this logical conclusion here, you could have someone from that middle ground actually being the vice presidential candidate for one of the parties, because they're going to turn around and say, hang on a minute, if, say, for example, you know, this middle party gets, you know, can say, well, hang on, we can bring 10, 11, 12, 13% of the electorate with us, you know, that then starts to give them a huge amount of power.
It does, absolutely. Now, speaking of huge amounts of power, in our last show, I posed the question of whether or not, you know, we should be in the ATS 10 wiki. And as you can see over here in the corner in the studio, we have not one, not two, not three, but four mailbags full of correspondence over here supporting the idea.
Absolutely. And I got the opportunity not too long ago to talk to ATS member Proto Firefox, who is Tin Wiki's editor. So opportunity to learn a little bit more about what Tin Wiki is.
Do you ever feel like you're being watched? Do you ever have one of those days when you feel like you really should be wearing a tinfoil hat? Are you tired of being abducted in the middle of the night? Are you fed up with being stalked by reptilians? If the answer to any of these questions is yes, then hey, we've got a deal for you. Case Professional Industries introduces Conspiracy Wash. Use this product in the shower, as a tile cleanser, or as a body wash. Within 3 to 5 weeks of casual use, no reptilian will be able to catch your scent. Extraterrestrial visitors won't be able to stand the taste of you, and you won't leave fingerprints in public places. Please be aware that this is not an actual hygiene product. This product is not meant for internal use. Keep away from open flames or small children. This product does not require a prescription. Ask for Conspiracy Wash today.
And I'm here with ATS member Proto Firefox. Good morning.
Good morning, man. How are you?
Very well, thank you. You?
I'm very good.
Good. Well, this is just a quick opportunity for a couple of members to raise their profile and let other members know a little bit about them. And I'm always interested in member names. So where did Proto Firefox come from?
Well, I used to play a lot of online games, and it started off just as Proto. But then I started using the Mozilla Firefox application, the internet, so then came the Firefox and eventually added stuff to both.
So there's no secret society implication here then?
No, there's no secret meanings or anything.
No conspiracy, but if people want to start a conspiracy, well, play games with them.
Definitely, yeah.
And I suppose one of the things is, it's always interesting, and I know we've done it with other people. How did you first discover ATS? What sort of got you here?
Well, there's a couple of reasons why. The first time I found it, I was at college looking for games on the internet, and an ATS game popped up. So I was looking at it then, but I didn't really go on it much then. It wasn't later until I started looking about the Bilderberger group. That's what got me started on it.
So all the New World Order stuff got you here.
Yeah, it was all of that. Still like it today.
And where do you spend most of your time then? Is it on? Do you get much into Below Top Secret?
To be honest with you, all my time's on Tin Wiki. I'd say about 90% Tin Wiki, maybe 8% RTS, 2% Below.
Okay, for those of our listeners who have probably seen Tin Wiki and not sort of understand it, here's an opportunity. Tell the whole listenership what Tin Wiki is and your involvement in it.
Tin Wiki is an online encyclopedia based around conspiracy topics. It's funded by thetopsecret.com, and anybody can contribute at all. We've had a lot of activity at the minute with the new RTS game. People can go and edit that article. You can basically add anything you want. I'm a Tin Wiki psyop, and I just keep an eye on it, edit stuff, block IPs if anybody's posting anything bad, and so on. And William Wonsack can award you up to 10,000 points per article, which is a lot, really.
I was going to say, 10,000 points, which makes any prize giving...
Very, very generous with them.
Golly, he's certainly more generous than we are, because, you know, if we're lucky, we might give you 500, or if we were really generous, no, we wouldn't. We'd still give you 500 points. So anybody can get on it, so it's there for the membership. Now, do you have to be a member of ATS to do anything with Tin Wiki?
If you're a member of ATS, your username and password should be the same on Tin Wiki. It should already be set up for you.
Okay.
But if it isn't, if you just click create account and just do it all the same.
So you make sure that things aren't sort of horrendously wrong and offensive on Tin Wiki, then you make sure that...
Yeah, we just sort out the formats, make sure everything's in the correct place.
And presumably the ATS T's and C's apply to Tin Wiki?
Yes, we do, although a couple are changed in a few cases, but... If you just try and keep with them, any difference, send a UTU to either me, Optimist, or William Wonsack.
Okay. And as this is the Above Politics show, how did you... I mean, everyone I'd like to think is involved in politics here, Fox, but, you know, is there a defining event? Is there something that you could say, this is where I sort of started to think about politics slightly differently rather than just sort of seeing it on the news, seeing it in the newspapers, and then maybe going out and voting?
To be honest with you, I was just drifting around politics. I wasn't that interested until I went on AbovePolitics.com. And I started seeing a lot of what they were doing. It's really got me into it now.
So you've not been minded to seek office yet? Or is that something that maybe is in your future?
No, but I have considered it. You know, like 10 or 20 years or so, though.
because you remember there is a competition out there from Above Politics show.
Yes, I remember the first one to get into office.
There we are, because that's one of the things that we're extremely interested. So I mean, do you sort of keep an eye on what's happening with Gordon Brown? I mean, is that the kind of thing that you'll actually, if you hear it, you know, on the radio or the TV, or you see it online or in print, is that the kind of thing that you might actually stop and have a look at, or are there different areas of politics that appeal to you?
I've been trying to look as much as I can, but I'm horrendous at work at the minute.
So
basically all I'm getting at the minute is just ATS, certain little bits here and there.
So presumably, can we take that as a huge positive that the Above Politics show is on your iPod?
It certainly is. I listen to every show.
That's what we like to hear. Well, I know you've got to get on, but I wanted to thank you very much for your time. Thank you very much.
I will see you then.
Okay, then. Thank you very much, Fox. Have a great day.
Take care.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Are you ready for a close encounter of the tinfoil kind and want to do some collaborative writing with some of the most intelligent people on planet Earth? Then go to our board home at AboveTopSecret.com and find TinWiki.org in the Conspiracy Theory Discussion Forum area. TinWiki is an online encyclopedia where members can create new pages and where every page can be edited by anyone reading the page and wanting to improve it. The 10 Wiki Encyclopedia is for a specific type of topics only, such as conspiracy theories, UFOs, ghosts, paranormal phenomena, mythological creatures, lost civilizations, and life on other planets, just to name a few. So join thousands of other ATS members in creating an encyclopedia of AboveTopSecret.com articles that will be viewed by millions of members and guests from around the world. And if you happen to see William Wonsack or Optimus, tell them Dave Rabbit sent you.
Well, Martin, all I really have to say now is that now that I've heard from one of the 10 Wiki editors with my own ears, now I feel much better. I think our fans are correct. I think that we should get our own listing in the 10 Wiki. And while we may not be what you'd call hardcore conspiracy material, we are willing to look at the alternative side of every news event that we discuss.
Absolutely. So, you know, a couple of things. I'm not going to say you, Proto Firefox, as I suspect he gets too much of that one. But certainly, you know, if you wanted to post your comments on whether we should have a little entry in ATS's Tin Wiki, you can go to the show thread, post your views, comments. If you agree with what Justin and I have said, you can tap us on the head and say, good job, chaps. But if you disagree, guess what? You come in there and fire off something. Justin and I will look at it, and we will come back to you. If you say something and you disagree with us, hey, tell us. We like to get involved. We love to hear from the members.
For all of us behind the scenes here at the Above Politics show, I am Justin Case.
And I'm Martin Bain, and we'll see you next time on the Above Politics show.
You've been listening to the Above Politics show. If you have a comment, suggestion, or an opposing view, please deliver it at AbovePolitics.com. The views expressed on the Above Politics show do not necessarily reflect the staff and management of the Above Network LLC or any of its affiliates. Thanks for listening, and please continue to deny apathy.